Good morning, and thanks for listening to WBNY. My name is Steve Garrow, and I'll be with you until 9 this morning. This morning, we're starting a new series of radio shows at this time between 8 and 9. It's called Family and Community Focus, and it's sponsored by the Collaborative Research Initiative of the Institute for Community Health Promotion here at SUNY Buffalo State. So this morning is the first edition of this, our new radio series called Family and Community Focus. And this morning, our special guest is Dr. Hector Ramos, who teaches in the Department of Educational Psychology in the College of Education and Human Development at Texas A&M University. And I believe that's at College Station in Texas. So, good morning, Hector, and welcome to the show. The theme for today's show is creativity in our everyday lives. And each week we'll be having a different theme related to family and communities. And today's theme is creativity. And to start things off, Hector, I'd like to ask you this question. How do you define the term creativity, or how would you describe it? It's a very widely used term, and it can have a variety of different meanings.
It's something new in the idea or the solution that I'm thinking of, and then there's an element of usefulness. Usefulness, is this useful for me? Now, everything is relative. You see, whatever is creative for people in South Africa may be already an old solution for people in the United States. So depending on this situation, the context, we are going to have to define it, or we are going to experience it in a different way. Different cultures also have different perspectives of creativity. What is creative for a Chinese person is not going to be the same to an Spaniard or an American. So understanding what that means for each culture is extremely enriching in our lives as well. So my personal definition goes beyond usefulness and novelty, maybe because I have an approach that comes from personal development. I believe that creativity has to do with being proactive, with a mindset that is proactive, that takes risks, and that is willing to go beyond, to make out of life something that is not only meaningful, but also significant in terms of making, giving a legacy or making an impact to other people. So everything that I do, and now I'm focusing on that, is really having a vision that goes beyond yourself. As you can see, it's a bit different for every person, but this is my take on it.
Oh, that's a very interesting definition there. I like the fact that you're including all different cultures, and the idea that different cultures can have different perceptions of this term creativity. You also mentioned the term taking a risk. I think that's very interesting, and I wonder if we are becoming a global society that is less willing to take risks. And how does that risk-taking, how does that make us more creative? I wonder. I think it's an important component, the idea of taking risks and being willing to fail and learn from those mistakes. What's your take on that,
Hector? Well, you know, the interesting thing about risks is that if you look at it, it's more of an emotional thing than a cognitive aspect of creativity. And creativity is always going to be about taking risks, and I'll tell you why. Because the moment you come up with a new idea, when you share a very new idea, crazy idea, what do you think is going to be the reaction of people? So some of them may agree with it, may be very happy, but some of people may laugh at it or may say, well, that's useless, you are... they may criticize it in many ways. So newness will always bring criticism. That's the psychological risk, of course. If you go in and come up with a new business and give a new product, a new service in the market, then whether people buy it or not, whether people say good things about it or not, that's also going to be a risk. That could be a financial risk as well. So risk is involved in every aspect of creativity, unless you just think about it. It's only the thoughts that I think and that I do on my own. That's a different story. But at the moment you make it social, there's going to be an aspect of risk. Now, the way to deal with this is to help people build self-confidence and also resilience. And resilience is the ability to bounce back after you fail. And so those are all the aspects of creativity that I think they are essential to help students and to help people get the best out of their experience, even if they have failed. The failure is not the problem. The problem is the way we interpret failure. And if you interpret it as a way of a chance to learn something very useful for your life, then you're going to feel completely different about your life experience. And I think that creativity tends to do that, because the more, you know, the more that you do something, the more you get used to it. You may be fearful. Imagine you are in sales. You may be fearful that people are going to reject you because they didn't buy your vacuum cleaner. But I tell you one thing, if you try that out 1,500 times, the next time you've tried, you got used to rejection. So it doesn't affect you so much. So you are used to taking that risk. So it's only about a matter of practice and getting to know yourself emotionally. So it's a bit of, it has to do with emotional intelligence, which is the ability to master our own emotions regarding creativity.
That's very interesting. And I like that you mentioned that you have to... Oftentimes, creative people, they come up with new and novel ideas, and they may be subject to ridicule by their peers.
Yes.
So I guess part of the skill set of being creative is learning to develop a thick skin and to be tolerant of people who are critical of your ideas or ridiculing them. And... I can think of a couple of examples right offhand. Vincent van Gogh, famous Dutch painter, was not so famous when he was starting out and he was trying this new painting technique, which was such a radical break with what had been done up to that time in Dutch painting. Before Vincent van Gogh, they were all painting in dark colors, browns and blacks and dark greens and all this kind of stuff, doing scenery paintings and creating in a very realistic style. He came along and started using vibrant colors, reds and yellows and oranges and midnight blues and painting in swirls and not painting realistically, but painting more in an abstract fashion. And of course he was subject to great ridicule. Everyone scoffed at him, and it really probably drove him to some of his mental issues that he had. He probably just couldn't handle all the ridicule. But, you know, once he passed on, and then very quickly his paintings became very famous. It became very enjoyed by many people, and now they're probably among the world's most priceless pieces of art. So, you know, there's one example I can think of. Another example that comes to mind, last night I was watching a show on the public broadcasting TV station. It was on Sherlock Holmes. Arthur Conan Doyle started writing these short stories back in the 1890s on Sherlock Holmes, a fictional detective. In his books, he laid out, I mean, Sherlock Holmes's technique was very much a radical break with traditional detective work at that time. Up until the 1890s, the typical way of handling a crime such as a murder was not to look at the murder scene or look for clues at the murder scene. It was to round up as many suspects as you could and basically beat them into admitting guilt, whether they were guilty or not.
That's a different technique. Yeah.
A very different technique. Arthur Conan Doyle suggested a different technique of looking for clues at the crime site. And there was a French police detective who took the ideas that Arthur Conan Doyle laid out in his fictional stories of Sherlock Holmes and created the first crime lab in Paris. And he was subject to great ridicule from his peers. They thought, you know, what is this guy doing? We'll give you a small room up in the attic, but don't ask us for money. You know, you try what you want. Well, his technique sure very quickly provided results. He solved a few major crimes that nobody else could solve. And he laid the groundwork for our modern-day CSI crime scene investigation techniques. So, this was a new and novel idea. He was subject to ridicule, and he just had to grin and bear it and develop a thick skin. So that sounds like a very important ability in terms of being creative.
Yes. But there's something extra behind that. I believe that the only reason these people were able to have that success is because they were passionate enough to eliminate the effect of criticism or ridicule.
Yes.
The passion was much bigger than the effect of the negative effect of ridicule.
Right. So passion is a big part of being creative, is having a deep-seated love for what you're doing. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you something else here, Hector. How do you think creativity can improve our relationships?
Well, there are many ways this can happen, but one of the ways that I've seen that it has tremendous impact, is the way we ask questions to each other. For instance, imagine that you at home, a lot of listeners may go back home or may have children, and the children come back home and have a day in school, and you have to ask them, how was school? And the answer, it was great, it was fine. Okay, so what is the conversation there? There is no conversation. Very often, people, they don't know how to ask for information. So we have to start thinking, how am I going to ask questions in a creative way where I connect more with the life experience of another? So we can start thinking about what is the thing that you enjoyed most today and why? So that, I know that seems like a bit strange, but the more you practice this question, the more you're going to get more information about the life experience of somebody else. Okay, you taught that last semester. What are the three lessons that you learned from last semester? I know that I'm making you think, but when you give me that answer, I know that's going to be an answer that matters to you and that matters to me. So as you can see, that is building relationships. It's improving relationships because we are showing a genuine interest in each other, and we can build and reflect together about what's happening. We don't have to go so much in depth, but the question is always about asking for details that are meaningful and asking open questions so that allows people to give you an answer that is meaningful and that is important for them. And when they do that, they will feel that you will feel that you know them a little bit better. So once you have a relationship in a family or friends or whatever, the question is always, am I getting to know this person better? Do they know me better? What is the quality of what we are able to do together? What is the quality of our experience? And I believe asking different types of questions and learning how to ask creative questions is key in building and improving relationships. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds wonderful, and I'm sure our listeners are enjoying what you're saying, or I certainly am. You're giving some good kind of tips for people in different kinds of relationships, a parent-child, teacher-student, employer-employee, all these kinds of very important relationships. Could you just repeat some of those kinds of questions that you were thinking that are kind of useful in this regard?
Well, yes. The first thing is just to forget about asking questions that have the yes or no answer, or questions that can be answered in very simplistic ways, easy to answer. Let's make it a bit more difficult for people. Let's make them think and remember something that is meaningful to them. So that is the purpose. So what could be one of the questions is, Well, Steve, you had we were teaching for a whole week. What are two or three highlights that really impacted you, or were most meaningful or teachable moments where you found that you made an impact in your students' lives? That could be applied to one day, or what? If you went to the zoo, what did you see that you liked most, and why? Always asking the why question is excellent, because it helps people to clarify and understand the experience that they went through, and then they can look into the details. See, when you ask these questions to children, they're going to tell you, yes, I'd love to see the lion, because when we came and the lion was walking around, and then they tell you a story. Ask people for stories. When they tell you stories, in that story, you can see that it's important for them.
Yes, and why kinds of questions, which may ask a person to think a little bit more than just a yes-no kind of response. And I think that's it just brought to mind the idea that a lot of people all of us spend a lot of time in front of the TV, and we're kind of being fed information. It's a very passive kind of experience. Even sitting in front of a computer screen is often a passive experience. We're surfing the web, and we're going to Yahoo News or whatever else and just reading, you know, often in a more passive style. Certainly TV, it's just images and audio being thrown at us. We don't have to really think about it too much. And so our mind might not be getting as much exercise as it really needs. So you're kind of highlighting and asking why types of questions and deeper questions beyond questions with yes-no answers. It's forcing us, it's stimulating our mind, stimulating our imagination, and which can only be healthy. You know, the more you use something, often the stronger it is. So I like what you're saying there about asking questions that force us to use our minds, our imagination in deeper and deeper ways.
And another way to do this, because you brought up the TV, I don't think that people are going to stop watching TV now. But another way to look at it would be to select some of the programs or movies that could be more stimulating for thought. Like, for instance, there are movies like Apollo 13 or The Martian, or there's so many movies dealing with creative issues. And then having some people around and then having a conversation about what's happening in the movie. See? So sometimes that can also help. You can have a proactive or an active interaction with the TV as long as you have something that is interesting and you have a way to start a conversation.
Yes, very, very good suggestion there, having a conversation after watching something or before watching something.
Yeah.
Very good suggestion. Another question that comes to mind is, Hector, how can creativity improve our motivation to achieve our goals?
So the theory that I use comes from Csikszentmihalyi, which is a professor at Chicago University. And he came up with a book called Flow. He wrote a whole book on this concept. And what I'm trying to do with my creativity classes and with my interaction with people is always to try to find out, first to clarify, what are people passionate about or how they can create a passion for something. That's number one. Number two, what are people talented about? What are the talents? And what are the talents they can develop? So once you find that interaction or no overlap between passions and talent, you can see that people are going to be highly motivated. And that is because, of course, they love what they do, but also they are able to do things and they can continue to build that ability. So that is one way of looking at it. But the other way about creativity and motivation is because the moment you start analyzing why you are doing things and how you can do them better, definitely what's going to happen is you're going to get a more of a clarity of your reason. Motivation is your motive, your reasons why you do something. And some people, they don't have enough reasons, so they have to think about some other reasons, or they have to clarify their intentions or their purpose. The moment you do that, and are able to align people to the purpose. I teach because I want to have an impact on the students. Well, if the moment I find that, I'm motivated to that, but that's a creative effort. And the other way to look at it is because we need to help people to find strategies to do this efficiently. So, of course, if I'm teaching and I know that people are not getting very much of my teaching, it's going to be highly frustrating. So I need to find ways to help people be engaged, be participating, and to know by the feedback that I get that they are applying concepts, they're applying tools, and they're getting a good experience out of my teaching. Then, because of the feedback, I feel very motivated. But that's because I found a strategy. So creativity helps you to find the best strategy for the people or for what you want to achieve. So these are two main motivators or two main ways that creativity can help you improve your motivation. What do you think?
Yes, I like what you're saying about identifying what you're passionate about, identifying what you're good about, and identifying ways that you can improve your abilities, looking for strategies. And this, to me, this is all about generating ideas, coming up with new ideas, new ways of looking at things, which in creativity circles, I believe we call that divergent thinking, generating ideas. So I think that's very important.
And I have one more thing to add, which is that very often creative thinking people, they only focus on ideas. And I believe that it has to go beyond that. It has to go through experiences. We have to go to what are the different types of experiences you can have in order to find out what you want. I'm saying that is because some people, they may not see themselves as a pianist or they're playing instruments, but the moment they get, for instance, if they go through an intensive course to just try to play the flute, and they find this, they fall in love with the sound, and then they find it's not too difficult to learn, and they find that this is something they see themselves doing, because of the experience, they will go in that direction. So I think that we need to be a bit more open to go. The experience will create, I would say, an impact in your emotions that maybe a thought will not. So that's also connected with motivation. But I really think that we need to expand the creative thinking to taking the risk to experience new things. And I'm just going to give you an example. I wouldn't be the person I am unless I had gone to Singapore. Now, I'm from Madrid, but I lived 15 years in Singapore. Now, that opened my eyes to many different people, Chinese, Indians, many different types of food, many different types of thinking. And so everything was a new experience. Even the state is run in a very different way than any European state. So for politics, economics, law, everything was new. And I tried to absorb and understand the opportunities that were open to me because of that. And I think that that experience for me was life-changing. And I believe that a lot of people, for instance, they don't dare just go in Buffalo. They won't go to Canada. But I think that going to Canada would be an interesting experience. At least go to the French-speaking cities and see how you can connect with people. I'm just giving you an example of how this could apply to people. What do you think?
No, I agree with you. If we have an interest, sometimes a little bit of instruction can go a long way in terms of helping us to build on that interest and giving us the confidence to move forward.
Yes, I understand.
And a little bit of technical skill, new knowledge and skill can be helpful as well. And I can think of my own example in learning to play the trumpet. I took up the trumpet in high school, and I was in the band, but I was constantly having some problems with the trumpet. The mouthpiece just didn't fit my mouth, and I couldn't reach any of the high notes that I wanted to play. And so after high school, I went to university, and I kind of let the trumpet go by the wayside because I just couldn't overcome this obstacle of not being able to play high notes. And just a few years ago, I wanted to take up an instrument again because I really love music and I love playing around with music and reading notes and playing things. And I thought, well, the trumpet's there. I have a bit of a background in it, but I still have this problem with not being able to play high notes. So I went back to it and started playing, but I couldn't play the high notes. But just through some twist of fate, I went online and was looking around at how to play the trumpet, and I came across a website with that was selling trumpet mouthpieces. And I learned that there are many different sizes and shapes of mouthpieces, and there's so many different kinds that they shape for different kinds of lips. So I found one size that was specifically designed for high notes. It's has what's called a shallow cup, and I bought it and started playing, and now I can play high notes. And so I'm enjoying it so much more than ever before, and it was just through a little bit of knowledge, which we can get either ourselves or we can get from somebody else. Taking a little beginner class in something can often be just the springboard that we need to help us to keep going. What do you think, Hector?
Yes, you touched one of the most important aspects of creativity, which we had left behind. As you can see, this is a complex issue, and is that one of information. How much information you have, and what is the information you need to solve your problem? Now, some people, they think that they don't have enough, but they don't know how to look for stuff. So definitely finding how to look for information is going to be very important in order to solve your problem.
Okay, it's 8:33, and Hector, we're going to have to take a short station break. We'll be right back, folks, in just a few minutes. We have Dr. Hector Ramos, creativity professor in the Department of Educational Psychology at the College of Education and Human Development at Texas A&M University, with lots of great ideas for us on creativity in our everyday lives. So do stay tuned. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
May your hands always be busy. May your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of changes shift. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. And may you stay forever young.
The Western New York Peace Center, located at 1272 Delaware Avenue in Buffalo, cordially invites you to become involved in our community by joining in on our many task forces. Task forces are an important way of educating our community and elected leaders toward a common goal of peaceful resolution without the need for violence. The Western New York Peace Center creates task forces to advocate for many in our community in the areas of economic justice, environmental justice, Latin American solidarity, peaceful conflict resolution, peace education, prisoners' rights, racial justice, and resisting militarism. For more information, contact the Western New York Peace Center at 332-3904 or email victoryross9@gmail.com. Also, like us on Facebook at WNY Peace Center. The Western New York Peace Center, activism for a safer world since 1967.
May you stay forever young. May you stay forever young. May you stay forever young.
The USG Dental Clinic is located in the Weigel Health Center on the Buffalo State campus and provide dental services that include dental exams, bite wing x-rays, and dental cleanings. Undergrad and grad students as well as staff can be seen for a small fee. The dental clinic is open Monday through Thursday when classes are in session, so call 878-6716 or stop by to make an appointment. The USG Dental Clinic is located in the Weigel Health Center.
Okay, thanks for listening to WBNY 91.3 FM Buffalo, Buffalo's original alternative since 1982. You're listening to this morning's show, Family and Community Focus, sponsored by the Collaborative Research Initiative of the Institute for Community Health Promotion at SUNY Buffalo State. And the purpose of this show is to present information about a variety of issues important to families and communities in the Western New York region. My name is Steve Garrow, and I'll be with you until 9 this morning. This morning we are lucky to have with us Dr. Hector Ramos, who is a professor of creativity in the Department of Educational Psychology in the College of Education and Human Development at Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas. And the theme of this morning's show is creativity in our everyday lives. So welcome again, Dr. Ramos.
Thank you.
And Hector's calling in from Madrid, Spain, which is a real privilege for us here in Buffalo. Hector, we've been talking this morning about a variety of aspects of why creativity is important. Let me ask you on a slightly different track a little bit of information about the nature of creativity. In your opinion, what are the main cognitive issues of creativity?
Well, you know, when we go to school, we learn information, we learn to memorize, we learn to analyze certain things. And there's some thinking abilities that we learn to practice. And sometimes we don't learn creative thinking abilities. So that's why some people struggle, for instance, to come up with 10 ideas or 10 uses of a break or something. They struggle to come up with many ideas. However, this is an ability that can be nurtured. And if you want to be creative, something very simple. Have many ideas. How do you have many ideas? By trying it out. List them. Now, this is like an a tool that can help you come up only by doing it, by writing it down. You stretch your mind, you stretch your mental muscles, and what I've seen is that people end up coming with many ideas. So fluency and flexibility are two of the key issues of creativity. And what I suggest people is just use simple tools, and I'm going to tell you just one of them, which helps a lot, is just bring distinct concepts together. Think about what you would do to design to bring the concepts of a car and an airplane together. And when you bring, or how would you bring the concept of a car and furniture? And the moment you help people by bringing distinct concepts together, you get creative results straight away. Not only that, you are helping them to make distinct connections. Making distinct connections is one of the key abilities to become creative, but we only do it by practice.
So making connections between concepts or objects or things that are quite different from one another and seeing where how they might be joined in some way. Is that it?
Yes, that's it. If you are thinking, for instance, how would you promote this creative thinking department, for instance, many of the first ideas that come up is have a website, put an advert in the newspaper, all these things. But when you start making a distant connection, how would you use the sound of an aircraft with a song to put it in the radio to promote this? You see, I'm trying to just bring in different things, distant things together, and I get a creative result instantly.
Is there a name for that technique in creative thinking circles? Is it... I think we talked about things like visual connections, I think, at one point in one of the courses I was taking. This is kind of like that.
One of the techniques, some people use the name forced connections, because forced connections, what you're doing is you're bringing different things together. You're forcing them together. So that's one of the names that is given in the literature.
Okay. That's very interesting. It sounds like a useful technique. On the same line of thinking, so cognitive issues you talked about, what about social issues? What are the main social issues of creativity?
So one of them we talk about, which is that of taking risks and coping with rejection. That's one of the big ones. But the other ones that is good to nurture and to understand is what is the culture of collaboration that we can have with each other and how this can become more creative. And the main subject here is our topic is, how might I recognize the creative abilities and the creative potential in people, and how can I work with them? Now, there is a tool produced by the Center of Creative Studies in Buffalo called Foresight that anyone can use online. And that helps you to differentiate between four different types of thinking. One is the clarifier, person who asks a lot of questions. The second one is the ideator, people that tend to have a lot of ideas and crazy ideas. The third one is the refiner or the developer. And these are people involved that they like the details. They're very good at developing solutions, and they will always look into details. And the fourth one is the implementer. And these are people that love to get things done, and they're always looking into the practical issues of solutions. So taking that instrument and getting some results, if you have a team, it's very good to know in what ways are people creative, so we can work together to achieve excellent results. Hmm.
Okay, interesting. I certainly like the idea of taking risk and coping with rejection and learning for ways to improve collaboration, because collaboration is not always there when it could help situations, and ways to help people to get along better with one another and work together with one another, and reducing barriers and promoting teamwork. These are all good ideas.
The idea is, how can we value each other's contribution? Because the more we value each other, the less we are going to try to push our own agenda and our own egos and to try to get all the credit. The idea would be, with a creative collaborative strategy, how to undermine the usual political issues that undermine collaboration anywhere, in a company, university, wherever you go.
Yes. Very, very important. Thank you for raising that awareness. Another question that comes to mind as we're talking about creativity is, how can we improve our creativity by doing simple things?
Yeah, so when you look into your life, what do you do every day? What do you do every week? So how many things do you do the same, and how many things do you do differently? What are small things you can do every day that can bring new experience into your life? For instance, in Buffalo, there are many different kinds of restaurants. And even if you go to some of the supermarket, you can find some places for Mexican foods and Asian foods. So why don't you try to either cook or a different type of dish with a different type of spice once a week? Not once a day, once a week. Why don't you go to a different restaurant, a different nationality, once a month? Why don't you try to go to different types of entertainment? If you don't go to see any music, like live music, why don't you try something different that you never tried before? So again, here, what we are doing is creating different types of unique experiences. But there could be something else you can do. Simple things are like, how can you relate, as we were talking about, to new people, different people? And one of the examples that I have, for instance, in my own experience, I love to do Rice Krispies, and I make them extremely sweet. I use two types of chocolate, and I interchange. It's the white chocolate inside and then the black chocolate outside. But sometimes I use mint dark chocolate or mint chocolate outside as well. And I put cinnamon in to improve it. I put some other spices. I've asked my students, what could I use differently? And I've taken their suggestions. I made the Rice Krispies, and I asked them to try their own creation. So in other words, what I'm saying is that I'm doing simple things. It only cost me about $15 to do at home. But again, I've looked into it not only from the personal perspective, but also from the group. I've led people to do simple things, try simple things that were creative, so that they could do the same on their own.
Hector, you're making me very hungry here this morning. I feel like...
Well, I thought we were getting too serious. We were getting too serious, and I was thinking, well, if I talk a bit about Rice Krispies, it will help.
Yep. That was a great example. I'm definitely going to be running out right after the show this morning and seeing if I can find some Rice Krispies somewhere. You know, what you were talking about, food, trying new restaurants. Well, that's very interesting, and I really like that idea. I've been boning up on my nutrition knowledge lately. I just registered for a course here on at the campus in Introduction to Nutrition. And one thing I learned recently is that nutritionists now are encouraging us to eat a very diverse diet. Eat as many different foods as we can. Try new flavors, try new smells, try new colors of food. Different colors of food bring different vitamins and minerals. Certainly dark greens bring things like iron and vitamin B and whatever, C. So that is kind of following what you're saying in terms of trying new things and trying new ideas. But it's interesting that nutritionists are promoting this very concept of flexibility as a way to improve our health, because apparently research shows that eating a variety of foods, different colors, smells, tastes, textures, actually improves our health. So maybe the same thing applies to our mental health as well. By trying different things, we also improve our physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health as well. So,
yeah, I can give you another example. It's like, for instance, for children, they don't like to eat vegetables. So the challenge is, how can I put vegetables in something they like? So one of the things that I do, I make my own pizza with pepperoni, and I put spinach under the pepperoni, so it's hidden. The spinach is hidden under the pepperoni, so the children take some spinach without even noticing.
Ah, that's very, 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 very interesting there, strategy. They did say, I've been reading some nutrition, and they have said something about the idea that children don't like vegetables because they're unaccustomed to the taste, but if you slowly keep feeding it, they will acquire the taste. I guess taste,
that makes sense.
Taste improves as we grow. Our taste abilities improve as we grow. So it's not, if a child does not like a vegetable, it does not necessarily mean that they cannot like it. It just means that their taste buds are not accustomed to it. And so if you keep slowly trying it out with them, over time they may acquire the taste. It's almost like acquiring the taste for beer or wine or anything else. It takes some time sometimes to do that. So interesting, yeah. Concepts of food. I'm always fascinated how food seems to find its way into so many things. And
no.
This morning we've seen how food ties in with creativity. So that's great. Another question related to that previous question is, how can we help people to improve their creativity?
So, of course, there are many ways, and we talked about some of the asking questions. That's great, but I believe that one of the ways to do this is to ask people for options. What are three options that you see here? In fact, coaching, the art of coaching, helps us in this matter a lot. So one of the ways would be to help people by listing a few options they can take, not only one, not only thinking there's only one way to do this. What are three ways? And then help them to analyze the pros and cons of each one and evaluate which one would be the best one. That's one way. The other way, as we were talking about information. So what if we ask ourselves or each other, what is the key information we need to obtain in order to solve this issue? So for your trumpet predicament was the issue of the mouthpiece. And if someone had told you and you had discovered that, then that would have helped you as well to improve your creativity, because you would have found out a simple solution to something instead of improving your skill. So I believe that we can help people by not only asking questions and listing a series of options, but also going into the details. What are some of the details that will make an impact here? What are the small changes that we can do in order to create a different atmosphere? I'm giving you an example, for instance, of what I do in my classroom, and I don't think a lot of people will do this, but that's the extent I'm passionate about, and I'd love to do this. So my classroom, my teaching time was from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., so what I did is I bring coffee and I bring cookies. I give sugar to people and I bring caffeine in order, and they think it's only about the chemical reaction, which is part of it, but also because it creates a relaxed atmosphere. So how can you create an environment where people are trusting you? So they open their heart and they try things out. They are willing to take risks. You see, it's not only about the number of ideas, but it's also about creating a safe place, an environment of trust, where people feel comfortable enough to take the risk that they wouldn't take otherwise.
Yes, I like that about bringing food to classroom. Sounds great. And I think another benefit of that is that typically you bring food and there's a break time. If you bring food, inevitably there will have to be a time where you break to eat that food. And that's a good time for students to socialize with one another and with the instructor. And slowly you can build a community, a learning community or whatever you want to call it, but just a community of people together, as opposed to something where it's a little more formal. You can break down some of these barriers and people can get to know each other. If they're eating, they're usually talking with one another. So again, wonderful benefits of food. Great idea,
yes.
Hector. Okay, so if we're interested in creative thinking, where might we get more information about creative thinking?
Well, the good thing about Buffalo State College is you have the Center of Creative Thinking and creative studies, and anyone can just drop by or send an email to Dr. John Cabra or Dr. Cindy Burnett. There are many people they can reach out, and they can point them to the right source. They can take some of the courses at the center. There are many things that they can do. Now, what I do personally, I help as many people as write to me, and I can be reached by Facebook, and I have a group on Facebook called Creative Cognition. So what I try to do is to help people through sharing resources, studies, so that they can log in and then they can watch these short videos and they learn one little bit at a time. But everything is like very inspirational, very motivational. I try to make it easy for everyone so we can learn together. But I believe that online there are a lot of resources, and the good thing about you is also your Center of Creative Studies. There are many resources, and what I would do is I will just browse, especially in the library. If you are very, very interested, the library in Buffalo State College has the largest library of creative studies. So there are many books that you can have a look at and then see what exactly you are looking for. So these are some of the resources that are available.
Very good. Yes, lots of resources here at SUNY Buffalo State. And it's 8:55, so we're going to be wrapping up the show soon, Hector. One last question. As students start their new semester here, how can a student, thinking about creativity, how can they apply creativity to become a better student?
Well, there are many ways to do that. I'm just going to share a couple with you. Number one is behaving like an actor. So the student has to think, I'm not myself, I'm going to act. I'm going to act in my classroom. Now, what I would like every student to do this semester is to act as this actor. The actor is the best student in Buffalo State College. So what you have to do is fake that you are extremely interested, fake by doing all the work that needs to be done, by doing all the readings, by asking all the questions you can think of. And then when you finish, you will realize that you have become that student. So very often what happens with a student is they're very passive, they're very reactive. But I think the good student will be proactive, will be asking questions, looking for resources, and getting into the depth of what it is or what they're studying. So what I suggest is that before you go to classroom, is just ask a few questions of what you would like to learn about that topic. And if these things are not covered, maybe you can ask one question to the professor, what do you think I can get a bit more information about this? And only because of your act of curiosity, that already is going to improve your learning. What happens very often is that we learn things that are very isolated. And we learn, and then we don't connect these things to other things. And what that makes is that we forget things very easily. So I suggest students to start making other connections. How can I apply what I have learned? How can I make a story about this? How can I make a creative product? How can I apply this to my personal life? How can I connect this with other things that I have learned? The more connections you make with what you learn, the more chances of you remembering these things, and these things become useful for you in the future. So this is a very proactive and there is a tiring effort, but the benefit and the fruits that you get from this mindset is extremely positive, because eventually what's going to happen is that 50 to 80% of the information is going to go to your long-term memory. Then you will be able to use this information for the job, any type of job that you look for, number one. Number two, what happens is you become a very effective learner. So after you finish university, you whatever you go, you will be able to learn much faster than anybody else. And that is alone enough to give it a try.
So three tips you mentioned there, Hector. One is behave as an actor. Become the role of the best student at Buffalo State. The second that I think you mentioned was ask questions in the class. Ask what you would like to learn in the course, and if the instructor's not covering that, where can you learn more about that?
Yes.
And then finally, you spoke about making connections between what you're learning and your real life as a way of putting the knowledge into your long-term memory, remembering more, and becoming a more effective learner. Is that...
correct. That's an excellent summary of what I said.
Okay. Very good. Very, very good. Okay. Well, we have covered a lot of ground this morning on creativity. Hector, do you have any final closing comments you might like to say as we wrap up the show here this morning?
Well, I just want to encourage every student in Buffalo State College to take advantage of the privilege of studying there. I definitely did, and I really got a wonderful experience with my wife. We both studied, and we both graduated in that university. And one last piece of advice is that if you find any obstacle, don't criticize, don't complain. Just think about what is this situation trying to teach me? What can I do to overcome this? Have a more proactive, constructive strategy. And then what's going to happen is that that thing that was an obstacle is going to be a learning experience that can shape your life. So this is how you can have a creative mindset and attitude towards your studies.
Wonderful advice, Hector. Wonderful advice. What is this situation trying to teach me? What can I learn from this? How often do all of us face obstacles in everyday life? And if we can ask that question, perhaps we can go from being negative to being more positive about it. So,
yes, exactly.
Thank you for presenting that piece of advice. Very important piece of advice. Okay, Hector, I would like to thank you very much for being on the show this morning. It's 9 o'clock, and it's we're going to move on to alternative music here. You've been listening to Family and Community Focus this morning, a new radio series here on WBNY 91.3 FM, sponsored by the Collaborative Research Initiative of the Institute for Community Health Promotion at SUNY Buffalo State. My name is Stephen Garrow. I'll be producing this series for the next 13, 14 weeks here on campus. Ms. Gail Daniels is the producer from the Institute for Community Health Promotion. And I'd like to thank this morning our special guest, Dr. Hector Ramos from the Department of Educational Psychology and the College of Education and Human Development at Texas A&M University. Thank you for joining us, Hector, and we look forward to hearing from you again in the future.
Thank you very much to you.
Okay, so we'll be talking soon. And thank you, listener, for listening to us here at WBNY 91.3 FM Buffalo, Buffalo's original alternative since 1982, brought to you by the Buffalo State College student activity fee here on campus. Now stay tuned for more great alternative music here on Buffalo State College. Have a great day. Have a great start to the semester, everyone. I'll be